The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. As you know, I have a book coming out very soon. It's called Is Atheism Dead? I'm pressuring all my friends and non-friends to pre-order a copy, whether at Amazon or ericmetaxas.com. It helps a book if there are a lot of pre-orders. So I'm begging you because, as you know, I've been canceled quite a bit. It's tough to speak to people when you've been so canceled, when YouTube has canceled your show. But I want to say, I think I've said it before in this program, but I'll say it now. One of the reasons I wrote this book has to do with the man who is my guest right now. His name is Dr. James Tour. He is a nanoscientist at Rice University in Houston. He and I got to know each other, and he started talking to me about the idea of life supposedly emerging from non-life. And the more I got to know about the subject and the more I got to know Dr. Tour, the more I thought it is wild that no one ever talks about this. This is a major apologetic for the existence of God or something like that. I also met a man in Albuquerque, Dr. Stephen Collins, who told me about the discovery of biblical Sodom. That was equally astonishing in the archaeological sphere, and I thought, why doesn't anyone know about this? So those two gentlemen, now friends, are at the center of what I talk about in my book, and I thought it would be fun, actually, to get Dr. Tour on the program, and you know what happened, don't you? We got him. Dr. Tour, welcome.
Thank you, Eric.
I'm going to call you Jim just because you said I could. But I want to say that it really was you who made me see clearly the stunning idea that for 70 years since this experiment in 1952, we've made no progress in determining how it is that stuff that is not life, zero life, suddenly turns into life. And I find it kind of funny. For people who don't know what a nanoscientist is and what you do, can you tell my audience what it is that a nanoscientist purports to do?
Well, I'm an organic chemist by training, but I work in the area of nanotechnology, where we're studying very small entities from materials to electronics to medicine, and packaging things in small packages and trying to have them deliver into parts of the body or being used to strengthen materials or making denser memories for computers.
What? Okay. So what is it about what you do and your training and your experience that gives you the ability to say with tremendous confidence that people, and I quote you obviously in the book, but that people who say, oh, yeah, we're on the verge of, you know, connecting the dots on this whole non-life to life thing. What is it that makes you so confident that they are, in fact, blowing smoke?
Well, organic chemists are much less prone to say that. People who actually make molecules for a living and have really read the literature on what's known in Origin of Life, people are much, much slower to make such a suggestion. And the reason is because if we look at where the science has come, it really hasn't progressed very far. So in 1952, there was an experiment that you were referencing, and that is the Miller-Urey experiment, where amino acids were made from basic building blocks like hydrogen cyanide and carbon dioxide and ammonia, And once these amino acids were made, people thought, ah, well, this must be the origin of life. It's going to be no time before we figure this thing out. And so for 70 years, we've been working toward this thing, and people have been working toward this thing. We find it's much more complex than what people thought. In fact, Miller and Urey have said the same thing, that it was much more complex than they thought. Now, one could argue that we haven't gotten much closer. I argue that we've gotten further away in the last 70 years. And you say, well, how could we be further away? And it's because the complexity of the cell, our understanding, as we get more understanding, the complexity of the cell is far greater than what we thought it was. It's not just a bunch of protoplasm. There is so much machinery, so much biological machinery in a cell that you would have to have. And so the target has moved further away with time. And so it's moving away faster than we're moving toward it.
Walk us through this. Let's say it's 1952. We put some electric current through some of the things you described, and shazam, we get amino acids. What would the next step be? In other words, they say, hurrah, we got amino acids. We're on our way to creating a cell. That's a tremendous leap, but I guess if you're very hopeful, you think, well, we've moved the ball a little bit forward. What would the next step be from amino acids?
So the next step would be the amino acids that were made were achiral. You have to get them in chiral form.
Chiral, C-H-I-R-A-L.
C-H-I-R-A-L.
Chiral, okay.
Chiral. And chiral means that they have a handedness, much like your hands. And so the vast majority of biological molecules are chiral, meaning that you might have the left-handed molecule and not the right. And it's hard to make just the left-handed without making the right-handed molecule with it, the non-superimposable mirror image. So everything that was made in the Miller-Urey experiment was made in a racemic mixture, meaning the left and the right-handed. So you'd have to first separate this. So lots of problems with separating them. Now, once you've separated it, now you have to be able to hook all of these together to make proteins, to make enzymes. The hooking together is very hard, and people say we've solved it. That is not solved in a biologically relevant reaction, meaning that reactions that would be available on an early Earth, where there is not a human being there to protect one side. So if I'm going to hook two things together, I can hook this to this, or I can have it hook this way. That's a problem. Which way does it go? And the way we do that is we protect one side, and then what we do is we react the other side.
In other words, you can make that happen, but you have to be very intentional, and you can make that happen. You're saying randomly it won't happen, but even the idea of linking two amino acids together, how many amino acids need to be linked together to form the most basic kind of protein?
Well, generally, there's 20 different amino acids, and a typical protein may have 100 different amino acids, 100 units to it, to 300 units.
Okay, that's to make a protein, not to make life, just to make a protein. So even making a protein via this random method, that seems to me a pretty silly thesis, the idea that that could just happen. But they were proceeding and have been for seven decades proceeding along the lines of that thesis, yes?
Yes, and it's more difficult than you're letting on, because what happens is these don't just hook together naturally. Even randomly, they don't just hook together. You need to activate the ends. You have to do activation chemistry. Now, human beings know how to do this. We've developed chemistry, but the poor early Earth doesn't have a brain to do this. So you just take amino acids and you put them in water. They don't spontaneously hook
together.
So
the people who say that this might have happened, what is their theory on how these things, after seven decades of looking into this, how do they think this might have happened when you make it sound incredibly difficult?
Well, they have all these proposals on how one end might have activated, and I can tell you some of the most recent ones that have come out. So part of the problem is, how do you get all these amino acids in a high enough concentration to react with one another? In other words, if if you have certain molecules in solution, if they're too dilute, they never find each other to collide together. So one of the ideas that has just come out is, okay, well, we'll just leave it so concentrated that they don't even dissolve in a paste without explaining how you're going to get them.
Actually, we're gonna go to a break. Folks, if you're confused, that's intentional. This is insane stuff. It's interesting, it's funny, and it's important. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the three-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a three-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the three-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works. Hey, folks, I'm talking to Dr. James Tour. I write about him extensively in my new book, Is Atheism Dead? Jim, I always find myself laughing when you're talking about this because it really is funny. You're describing tremendously difficult things, and then you're trying to explain how scientists think this might have happened all by itself. It's difficult to do this even with intentionality, but they're actually saying, we think it just happened by itself on the early Earth. And what you've described, I mean, it seems like to sum up, you're saying the more you know about what goes on, the more you know this never happened. This can never happen. I mean, it seems clear the more you talk. I mean, we're just talking about a few tiny bits at the beginning of a process, and you're saying we can't even get to that.
That's right. Now, I can never say it can never happen. As a scientist, I don't know what we're going to discover. But based on what we know of organic chemistry and how molecules hook together, the amino acids do not spontaneously assemble. And even if you could get them to spontaneously assemble, they would assemble in randomly different ways because there's side groups can attach, because there's different tentacles that could attach that take it out of the normal arrangement that you need for a protein or an enzyme. And then even if you could attach them, the order of attachment is critical. When you have 20 different amino acids, how do you attach them? That's the informational order. We don't know how to do that either.
What are the odds of that? In other words, let's say they just attach themselves easily, but you're saying there's an order. I mean, it sounds like saying I've got to flip a coin and it's got to land heads 20 times in a row or the whole thing falls apart.
Yes, but it's actually much harder than that. I mean, the numbers are staggeringly small that you're going to get anything that's going to be useful for something. And if you did get one molecule that was useful for something, you'd never get another one of those. So, yes, this is staggeringly hard. It is difficult at absolutely every step. And the amino acids are easier than the sugars, which we haven't even talked about yet.
So what do we need? In other words, if somebody says, okay, here's a cell. What do we need to create a cell? So we need proteins. We've made that sound virtually impossible. What else is needed? What are the building blocks?
So in addition to the proteins, in addition to the amino acids which lead to proteins, you need the sugars that lead to the polysaccharides. You need the nucleic acids that lead to the DNA and RNA. And you need the lipids that make the membranes around the structure. All of them are hard.
I mean, it just seems like the numbers, it's hard for us as human beings to fathom these kinds of numbers. I mean, again, I mean, I always, to keep it simple, yep. I say it's like flipping a coin and it comes up heads three times in a row and you go, we're off to the races. And you flip it one more time and maybe it's heads again. But you're saying, okay, we just need to do that a million more times. You know, in a trillion years, that's not going to happen. We know
that. Well, you know, you're making it sound too easy, Eric. A million is much too small a number. And also, even if you had all of these, so this is the challenge that I've put out there. I will give you, I will take from a cell and I will give you all the lipids, all the nucleic acids. I'll give you the saccharides and I'll give you the amino acids. Now, you have them all. Go ahead and make a cell. We have to have these hooked together. Okay, I'll hook them together for you in any order that you want so it has the information that you want. Now make the cell. So it's not just having them. It's now that you've got them, what do? We have these. We have these in our hands. You can get these from living cells. You can extract all this. If somebody could just take these components and build another living cell out of them, they'd win a Nobel Prize that year. I mean, that year, it would be such a big thing. So even if you have all the components, you don't know how to put the thing together.
Well, look, so you bring us to the real question. Why, for 70 years, have kids been taught in school that science has solved the problem of how life came into being without God? Why?
Well, again, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a sociologist. It's hard for me to know the why, but I can underscore that so many people are taught about this primordial soup model, where you have a few molecules sitting in a pond somewhere, some lightning strikes, and a cell assembles, and then those cells start to assemble into an organism, and a creature comes slithering out of the pond. People are taught that. And when there's denial that's saying, oh, people are not taught that, I've lined up over 20 different textbooks that show this, from the elementary school level to the advanced college level, still talking about the primordial soup model. I've had surveys done that show that people think that scientists have created simple life in the lab, including frogs, and then other questions about simple life in the lab, including a single bacterium. And throughout, people are totally deceived on what has been done. So it's a real tragedy. Why this has happened, I'm not sure, but probably some people can speculate.
Well, I mean, I'm always happy to speculate, but I'm still fascinated that you know enough about this to say this very clearly. The odds against this are so astonishingly high that you do have to wonder why somebody would keep pushing. What do they have to gain? I mean, would anybody dare say we know we're barking up the wrong tree? Are you the only one publicly to say that?
Well, I'm one of the few voices who is a practicing scientist doing mainline science. There's just a small number of us that are saying this. Because to say that we have no idea where we've come from, it's hard on one's career. So they keep you from getting certain funding, they keep you from getting certain things, and many people like to say certain things about us. So others don't take it on. But I will tell you that behind closed doors, many of my colleagues have agreed with me. Many of them have said, you know, I agree with you. We have no idea how this thing has been done. And they keep trying to lessen the problem. They say, oh, well, cells were much simpler back then. That's wrong. This has already been calculated. Biophysicists have already calculated you'll need minimally 206 protein-coding genes. And you need a whole array of substructure to build the simplest of cells the simplest thing that could possibly be built. So they keep trying to change the problem, but it doesn't go away. It's right there.
Do you think the people, I mean, it seems clear to me that the reason your career can get dented or severely harmed from talking about this is because you're challenging a materialist scientistic paradigm, that if you challenge that paradigm, and by talking about this, you do challenge it, it seems to frighten people.
It absolutely does frighten people. And it seems, Eric, as if I'm speaking to people we're not talking about science anymore. They're talking about a religion, because when you push somebody's religion and they don't have answers, they start getting extremely defensive. And this is what happens. As soon as I start poking at this thing, people start getting extremely defensive. They want to quiet me. They want to ruin a career. They want to silence this sort of thing. And science is not generally that way. You would think that here I am in a university with lots of scientists, that they would say, oh, Jim, you don't understand this? Here, let's go to lunch and I'll explain it to you, because a child can understand this. You'd think that they'd do that. Nobody's come close to doing that on Origin of Life. Nobody has come close. And as soon as I get them isolated and alone, they'll admit to me, we're clueless on this thing. We have no idea. And there's been whole institutes set up for the discovery of the origin of life. And they're nowhere close, and they get further away every year. And it's a big facade. There's a bunch of nonsense going on out there.
Well, I remember reading an article. I thought it was in the Atlantic Monthly in 1989 or 1990, a cover article looking back on 40 years since Miller-Urey and saying effectively, we know absolutely nothing to this day. That was in 1990. We are now 31 years past that, and you're saying we know less than nothing. This is dramatic. I think there needs to be some kind of a reckoning. I think you're doing that. By writing about you and this in my book, I'm hoping to push some people to deal with this, because this is something that, I mean, one of the things I say in the book is that this is the thing that no one talks about. Everybody will talk about, let's argue about evolution or theistic evolution or intelligent design or Darwinian evolution. We argue about how you get from single cells to people. No one ever touches on what you're touching on, is how we get from non-life to life. And I suspect the deafening silence is because people are scared to death. They know that there's no winner if they open their mouths. It's just going to be bad. We're going to go to a break, folks. Let me remind you, please pre-order the book. It is Atheism Dead? You can join the launch team. Go to ericmetaxas.com. I feel an urgency about getting this information out, folks. This is amazing stuff. We need to broadcast it. Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. Joe Biden and the Democrats have laid out the most socialist agenda our country has ever seen. Instead of following President Trump's blueprint that had the economy booming, the Dems are going to raise taxes, increase regulations, and skyrocket an already outrageous national debt. If your retirement is in traditional investments, it is in jeopardy. Americans should be diversifying their investments with gold and precious metals. Gold gives you control over your wealth and protects you from market volatility, inflation, and a weakening dollar. When investing in gold, I turn to Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy Precious Metals has over 40 years of experience in helping Americans protect their finances, and this team is prepared to patiently consider your own personal financial needs. If you're looking to invest in gold, call the good folks at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-473-6204 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Don't leave your retirement to chance, friends. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. That's 866-473-6204. Folks, I'm talking to Dr. James Tour at Rice University in Houston. He is an organic chemist, nanoscientist. How do you think people think of you behind your back? Do they think, well, that guy believes in God, and you know, or do you think secretly they're just troubled because they know you're right? What is your sense? I mean, the silence from your colleagues is it's at least fascinating.
Yes, I think they probably think both of what you just said. I think that they know I'm probably right, and I think that they are amazed that I believe in God. So I have, to the extent that I do, I have friends that tell me that the conversations that go on out there, that people cannot fathom why my research is exploding and going so well, and I've decided to take on this topic and keep exposing this. So, but I'll keep doing it. You know, I'm at a place, you know, I've already thrown my hat over the wall, as President Kennedy has said, and I have to I'm already in this fight, and I'm here to stay, and I'm going to continue to expose this all the more and shout it out as loud as I can. That's why I started a YouTube channel and just try to get the word out there to the masses, because it's difficult to challenge like this in the primary literature. I mean, try to get your peers to allow this to get published. I mean, it's very hard. So I'll just go straight to the masses and shout the word.
That's interesting. So you have tried to make this case in a peer-reviewed paper, and it hasn't been accepted.
Very hard to get this in peer-reviewed papers. Very hard. So I've put it on in the journal Inference. I've written several articles about this where they're more open to accepting this type of thing. But in peer-reviewed papers, I mean, it's extremely difficult.
Isn't that interesting to you? I mean, that you are a scientist, you're going to your scientific peers and saying, what do you make of the science, not the philosophy, what do you make of the science? And they're saying, we don't want to hear it. I mean, it's like the folks who said, we don't want to look through Galileo's telescope because what we see may influence us.
Yeah, well, I'll push this harder, Eric. I'll continue to push this and put it right back in their face and say, here, you got to begin to think about this. You got to begin to deal with this. But also, I've gone to the masses because these are the people who are thoroughly confused by what the scientists are saying. Because what happens, Eric, is people feel the scientists know this. Scientists must know this. The scientists don't know. The scientists don't know. And you have pseudoscientists that really know very little that are proclaiming that we know this.
Well, I mean, you say you go to the masses. I keep teasing you. You know, you need to write a popular level book sort of telling your story, getting into some of this stuff. I'm not kidding. That's why I wrote my book, because I said the world needs to know, people who aren't going to find you on YouTube, or they're not going to look more deeply into this. Everyone needs to know, because this is so major. I mean, this is not some tiny piece of science. This is like at the bottom of everything. We're talking about this, life.
Everything.
This is not about, you know, let's talk about why is that sequoia tree? Why? I mean, this is at the bottom of literally everything, and nobody has an answer, and nobody's talking about the fact that they don't have an answer. So I thought your story needs to get out there. But you said, have a YouTube channel where you're talking about this.
Yes, it's Dr. James Tour, and I've been putting out videos on this thing, and I'll continue to put out videos and expose this thing and talk about articles as they come out in the literature and just expose them for what they are, that these things cannot work. And this is so true. The lifelessness that we have seen on every other planet is exactly what we would expect. This thing of life is so unusual to have such a high energy system with such low entropy, meaning that there's this enormous order, but it is extremely, it's running on very high energy. And this sort of arrangement, I mean, this is the most extraordinary system that you can find. So think of this with me. Is people build robots. We build robots all the time. We have this example of biological robots, people like us, walking all around. We never build them out of biological systems. We build them out of silicon. We build them out of plastics and composites. Why don't you build it out of biological systems? Because we have no idea how to harness these to build with this. And this is the hardest way to build. And this is exactly how we've been built. And it's ubiquitous on this planet. So everybody thinks that we understand this stuff. We have no idea. And right in front of our faces is all of this life. Wherever you just turn over a rock and this is all this life. And we have no idea how to make this. And we're talking about a single cell, not even a whole organism where you have a lot of cells working in concert, an organism you can see. We don't even know how to make the single cell.
I tell you, I've written about it in two of my books, but in the 1880s, my great-grandfather leaned down, picked up an ant on his finger, and showed it to my great-grandmother and said, tell Mr. Newton, Isaac Newton, to make me one of these. And he saw in 1880-something that the complexity of an ant, the greatest minds cannot begin to approach this. Now that we can see at the nano level, you can see exactly how difficult it is. But my larger thesis in the book Is Atheism Dead? Is that science and archaeology, all of knowledge seems to be pointing dramatically to what Stephen Meyer calls the God hypothesis. It seems to make a lot of people uncomfortable, but it does seem to be roughly where we are.
I think the signature of God is all over this.
I think we're at the end of a segment. Hang on. We'll be right back to continue that. Folks, I'm talking to Dr. James Tour of Rice University. He is featured in my book, Is Atheism Dead? And what we're talking about here is featured in the book because it's amazingly important. There's just no way around it. This is as central to everything as it gets, and no one is talking about it. And when I realized that, Jim, I was astonished that I had forgotten to ask this question. It's been decades since I wondered about this, and then you think, this is the question everyone should be asking. So what I said to you before we went to the break, it really does seem like science itself is pointing to a creator very dramatically. It's not a hint anymore. When we look at at this issue, when we look at the issue of the fine-tuned universe, Stephen Meyer deals with this in his book, The God Hypothesis, and of course I deal with it in this book, the evidence has become overwhelming. And I think it simply is making people uncomfortable because we're experiencing some kind of a paradigm shift, and typically people don't like paradigm shifts. They have a lot invested in the paradigm.
Yeah, I think the signature of God is all over this. Now, as a scientist, again, I don't know if we're going to figure this thing out in 500 years or 1,000 years, but we're nowhere close right now. And to think about how this could have come just using our basic understanding of the physical sciences, we are nowhere close to this. And the simplicity of a cell is not simple at all. And now you go to a whole organism where you have all of these different functions going on. It's crazy hard to think about how this comes about chemically. Very, very difficult.
Have you ever spoken at all about the fine-tuned universe? Because that seems to me equal to this, where the evidence, it just gets more and more dramatic. Science is not pointing away from God. It's pointing to God, or at least to a creator. And I really think that it's almost comical that, you know, we bought this this idea in the culture, 1966, Time magazine comes out with Is God Dead? And we sort of bought this idea that, yeah, science is pushing God further and further out. And ironically, it's just the opposite. And here we are now with so much evidence that the universe was exquisitely fine-tuned, so much evidence that there is no way through natural processes or any kind of processes that we're aware of, a cell, life could come into existence. I just have to keep thinking that it really is making people squirm. And I wonder if there are people who are secretly coming to faith or who are saying, I think there has to be a God, but I just don't want to talk about it publicly.
Well, I can tell you organic chemists that talk to me are as clueless as I am on the origin of life. And I think that they're reflecting on something much deeper because it seems like the hand of God is behind all of this.
That's a heavy statement. You can see why that makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I don't bring God into any of the arguments as to why the origin of life is a hard problem and we're clueless, because if I bring in God, people want to dismiss me. So I leave God separate from this argument because the science itself is screaming, we have no solution to this. The science itself is showing this. And so I just use science to show it.
But I still find it funny that nobody ever asked this question. This, no one, apart from you and apart from me trying to talk about it in the book and wherever I speak, no one asks the question, hey, where did life come from? Like, how do we get the first cells? In fact, in the book, I cite three dictionary definitions of abiogenesis, this process of life to non-life. In every one, they actually, I'm not making this up, they use the word evolution. And I thought, evolution? You can't have evolution and natural selection until you have life. But they are somehow working it backwards before there was life, as though evolution could be this mystical process that works even before. And so it really does become a religion. It has to be true for them. They don't care what the facts say.
Well, that's certainly true. There's this new term called chemical evolution, which is a bunch of nonsense. We never used to use that term. This is new. People are saying chemical evolution leads to the origin of life. Molecules do not evolve. Molecules do not move toward life. They have never been known to move toward life. They've never been known to move toward an ordered system that is non-regular in pattern, meaning that you can have molecules go AAAA or ABABABAB, that sort of order. But you never have the non-regular patterns of order that you would have to have in life that is throughout a cell. And you never have them moving in this direction. And I've asked my colleagues, I said, can you show me any example of a self-assembled system that moves into an array that is non-regular pattern order? Nobody could show me anything.
Isn't this called pseudoscience? I mean, when you start playing with words like this, I mean, it's like saying, this is a breathing rock or an excreting rock. You'd say you're playing games. It's a rock. It can't breathe. It can't excrete. Why are you talking about this? I mean, what you just said, the idea that chemicals can't evolve. I mean, any fool knows that, but it almost seems like you have to be some kind of a confused genius to propose the idea.
Well, and it gets even worse, Eric. So people will see what's called a vesicle, which is a lipid bilayer, much like you might get in salad dressing as you shake it really hard in little bubbles, and they'll say that this is a protocell and this is characteristic of life, and then they'll watch these things and they'll describe it as if it's life. And simple forms of life came from things like this. They're clueless. This is not life. It's something that might look to the naked eye like a cell. But as soon as you start probing into it, there's no resemblance at all. And they'll make this suggestion that early forms of life came from what they call protocells. It's just a lipid bilayer membrane. And they call it a protocell.
It's a little bit like saying, you know, that cloud looks a lot like a bunny rabbit. Who knows? Maybe that's how bunny rabbits started. At least it's a thesis. Let's get a few billion dollars and let's work on that. We'll show how we transition from the bunny cloud to actual bunnies. It's always fun to talk to you, Jim Tour. I hope folks will look you up. YouTube, what's the YouTube channel?
Dr. James Tour.
Dr. James Tour, Dr. James Tour. Dr. James Tour, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That James Tour.
Oh man.
Okay, folks, today in hour one, we had James Tour.
Yes.
I feature him prominently in my new book, Is Atheism Dead?
Yeah.
There is nobody like him. In fact, he's sort of responsible for my writing the book. I'm not kidding. He and Stephen Collins, the archaeologist, the two of them were what made me think, you know what? I need to write this book. I hope you've pre-ordered several copies. If you want to do your Christmas shopping now, who's going to stop you? If you go to ericmetaxas.com, the Baker Book Link, there may be others, but that one I know is $14.97. That's 45% off for the book. Folks, nobody is coming near that. So if you want to buy multiple copies, you want to pre-order multiple copies, I don't know how long that price will last. You understand that's a ridiculous price. So I beg my friends, if you're going to buy it, get it now.
And do the Christmas shopping now, because Grouchy Fauci might cancel Christmas again this year. So get it now early.
That's right. That's right. It's part of the Luciferian agenda. We can't talk about that.
No, let's not.
Okay, so here's the point I want to make. We are doing a fundraiser with the Alliance Defending Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
We need to hit it hard. For some reason, I know people are probably fatigued, but I want to say that if you give money to the Alliance Defending Freedom, you're basically helping yourself and your country, because they are fighting for religious liberty. I can never stress it enough, and it always sounds like maybe I'm exaggerating. Folks, this is the central issue of our time. Liberty in general, but religious liberty, is under attack. Without religious liberty, such as we have had for these 250 years almost, we cease to be America. Now, if you've read my book, If You Can Keep It, you'll understand that a little bit. That is who we are. We have effectively ignored these ideas because we've said, oh, we're so blessed and we're so free. Well, in the midst of taking our eye off the ball, some dark forces have come in who see things differently. And your average American is having to fight like crazy simply to preserve his or her freedoms. Religious liberty is at the top of the list. I mean, people are being threatened by, Attorney General Merrick Garland if they did. I mean, you know all this stuff. You hear it in the news every day. If you want to do something about it, please, folks, I don't care. I think I said the other day, if it's the widow's mite or the widow's 20,000, we hope you understand how serious this is. And when people say, what can I do? I don't think it gets clearer than this right here. If you give money to the Alliance Defending Freedom, they are defending our religious liberty. And it's not like there's a raft of these folks out there, okay? There's a tiny handful of organizations that do this pro bono. They take on these cases. My employee, Katie Madonna, they have gone to ADF because of a horrible thing that they are going through right now with an employer trying to force them to take an experimental jab. So, like, if you get a blood clot or you die, what can we tell you? Get the jab. You want to keep your job? We don't care. I'm just telling you, whatever you think about the vaccine, this is not America when people are forcing you to do stuff like this. And if you don't understand that, you're not doing your homework. That's a fact, what I just said. I can give you chapter and verse, but not now.
Right.
We need you to give to ADF. So please go to MetaxasTalk.com. If you prefer to use your phone, I'm going to read the number, but we kind of desperately need your help. This is a big deal. 855-547-5333. 855-547-5333. You can also help America by blessing people who've been canceled, whether that's me or Mike Lindell. Mike is such a hero. Go to mystore.com. You can get all kinds of stuff there. Use the code Eric. By the way, gorgeous Bonhoeffer posters.
Yes.
We didn't have them before, specially made. They are gorgeous. They're huge. It's the cover of my book. It's that photograph. Go to mystore.com, use the code Eric. Go to frankspeech.com, use the code Eric. It is now something you can use there. Thank you.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.